Hello, everybody, and welcome to Special Education Information put on by Touching Success. My name is Joy. The racket you will hear from time to time in the background are my companions today, JoJo and Sterling. They are my African Greys, and they love to participate. Today, I want to talk about word problems. Yes, those dreaded things that teachers put down on our desks, and we have to solve them, and there's so much information in them, and how in the world do we come up with an answer? And for some of us, those answers for story problems haunt us clear into our adult lives when we are presented with story problems of real life. As I mentioned in my last podcast, I deal with dyscalculia. This is something that is near and dear to my heart because I really felt like nobody recognized it and I had a very difficult time in school and math classes as a result of it. What's dyscalculia, you may ask? Dyscalculia is like dyslexia, which is hard time reading, only it is with doing calculations, which affects everything in math. There are obviously calculations from entering kindergarten all the way through our adult years. And so I will throw in things that have helped me to get along with having this disability, and hopefully some ideas will help you either find children that have this or at least help them. Before I go any further, I want to make sure to give Dr. Nancy Mather credit for this work. It is her research that I am pulling this information from. So, difficulties with story problems. I looked at story problem and it was like a puzzle that was all one color and all the pieces being completely different, ragged shapes that actually never really fit together. That is how my mind viewed story problems. I hated them. I haven't seen any research to back this up, but imagine most kids who have a problem with dyscalculia feel the same way about the story problems when the teacher puts them in front of them. They may sit and stare at that problem, rewrite the problem, draw pictures for the problem, and just don't quite get what they need to do to get to the correct answer. Kids who have dyscalculia when they're doing story problems, and you'll probably see this also with children who have dyslexia, they have a hard time figuring out what is extraneous information and therefore ignoring it when they're putting the problem together. Children who have both dyslexia and have dyscalculia have a hard time putting everything together because they have a hard time reading the problem. And then once they've gotten it read, if they can remember it, remember that's a symptom of dyslexia, is not being able to recall what you have read, even if it was just 2-3 minutes ago. And then they've got to figure out all about these word problems that have extraneous information in it, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. So like if you have a word problem that's about flowers, but just for the heck of it, it throws in something about birds, somebody with dyslexia and with dyscalculia are going to have a hard time figuring out that the birds have nothing to do with that problem. When I started being able to understand how to put word problems together, then I got known for something else, which was that I could set the word problem up, write it out exactly how it's supposed to do, and do all the calculations for the problem completely incorrect. I remember in my chemistry class, we were given a challenging problem, and I actually figured out how to get to the answer, but I didn't do the math correctly, and so I got it wrong. But the teacher did praise me for being the only student in the entire class that had figured out what the basis of the word problem was. Some children have a hard time completing all of the steps inside of a word problem. Maybe they do steps 1 and 3 and totally forget 2, and that's going to lead to a wrong answer. You can see how many different ways there are that you can mess up a word problem. Another thing that causes difficulties with story problems for kids with learning disabilities is the vocabulary inside of the word problem. Do the kids even know what it is? Because if you remember, kids with learning disabilities, their reading vocabulary tends to be lower than average. That doesn't mean that their cognitive abilities aren't on the same level as everybody else. It just means they don't have as much exposure to print because reading is so difficult for them, they usually won't bother. So then when it comes time for them to solve story problems at grade level, they're at a disadvantage, and this needs to be something that's looked out for by teachers or aides. Are they struggling with the problem because they can't read it, because they can't figure out the steps they need to take, because the vocabulary is just too hard for them? Since computational skills are so difficult for them, place emphasis on understanding language and solving the problems. Don't worry about computational skills as long as they can set the problem up correctly and they're understanding the steps they need to take to get there. Dr. Mather recommends using spiral curriculum, and that is curriculum that keeps going back and reviewing and going back and reviewing, so it's always staying fresh in the kid's mind. One of the ones she recommended was Math for Today, a Donna Pearson curriculum, and the other one that she recommended was the Saxon Math curriculum, which I have worked with, and I do like that particular curriculum for kids. So I have this list, and it's a list of don'ts, what not to do with kids who struggle with story problems, and probably the kids who don't have a problem with a disability for learning would appreciate this as well. So don't use keywords to signal an operation. Why not? Problems are with, for example, how many. It's often taught as an addition keywords, but that doesn't always work. For example, Susan had 3 pens. She gave 1 to Mary. How many pens does she have now? Last year, Bill owned 4 CDs. Today, he has 4 times as many. How many does he have? And last, Mark had 20 pieces of candy. He shared them equally with 3 friends. How many does he have now? Well, you can see that you wouldn't be using those for addition, but for other operations. I suppose teachers who teach keywords hope that the kids will be able to figure out that the answers are way off and it doesn't match up. But you get the kids with dyslexia and or dyscalculia, and those answers don't make any sense, but they may not even notice it because they're so used to getting everything wrong. Along the same lines, don't teach children to use computational rules to solve problems. For example, don't tell children to add whenever they see 3 different numbers. It does not always work that way, and you will continue to confuse the children, especially with this one, dyscalculia kids. If you've been spending time in your classroom and you're doing a lot of computational work, don't wind up the day with a word problem. It's unfair to these kids. They're going to be the last ones out and they probably won't get the answers right anyway. And it would be great if you don't mark these children wrong if computation is wrong, but the operations are set up and laid out correctly. So if the problem, for example, I had a student who always put 2 plus 3 as 6, and it didn't seem to matter how often I worked with her on it. She just didn't seem to be able to get 2 plus 3 as 5. So I actually started letting her use a calculator, but I'll go into the calculator issue in a little bit. Don't treat problem solving as secondary to computation. Computation can be offset by the use of a calculator. However, they have to be able to solve the problem first. They need to know what steps that they need to take to get to the computation. So again, refer back to my last student I talked about. 2 plus 3 isn't 6, it's 5. How did I finally help her continue advancing in her math? It was the use of a calculator and learning to teach her how to do the operations of the different steps of the problems that I was giving her. Don't assume, too, that just because the child can do the arithmetic that they're going to be able to do it correctly inside of a word problem. Again, there's so many steps to word problems, and what you basically need to do, and I'll give some recommendations in a bit, is help a kid learn how to set up the problem, solve the steps, and they can use other means to help with the computation. And don't think because a child's answer is wrong that they can't solve the word problem. Again, take the time, make them show their work. I know they all hate it. They don't want to show their work. I hated it when I was their age too, when it came to problems I knew right away. But make them show the work, because then you can see, are they setting the problem up correctly? Okay, you might be asking yourself, oh my goodness, there's all these don'ts. don't do this, don't do that. What do I do? I have answers for you on that one too. Start the very first day they walk into the classroom as a little teeny tiny one with learning to problem solve. It can be anything, just problem solve. I've worked with so many kids who were not taught how to do that, and we were like going backwards. For example, I had a student who had a backpack that only fit two books, but he had an additional bag with him. I don't remember why. And he just couldn't seem to figure out that he could only get two books into his backpack and not that third one. And he kept trying, and I started trying to work through with him, how do we solve this problem? Can we fit all three books into that backpack? Or, look, here's an extra bag. Maybe we have to put the third book into that bag. So two go in the backpack plus one of them go into the regular bag, and you still have all three. It seems simple enough, but so many people didn't want to sit down and help him problem solve things. They just did things for him. And as a result, here he was as a later elementary child and not able to figure out simple real life problems. So flip word problems on their head. Make problem solving the reason for the computation. You have to be able to compute this to get to the answer. But you have to solve the problem to figure out what you need to compute. This actually would work for most kids because it might solve that problem of, why do I have to do this math? There's no point to it. This is boring. But if you give them word problems that they have to solve, real life word problems, then they might think to themselves, oh, well, then it makes sense that I have to figure out how to do these basic algebra problems. And do this. Teach kids, show kids that there's more than one way to solve a problem. That way, if one method they're trying is just not working, they might be able to think to themselves, oh, maybe this will be a better way to solve the problem. And they go that direction, and then they get to the answer. Pay attention to how complicated the reading is. Does it have high vocabulary? Does it have vocabulary that makes no sense? Does it use difficult to sound out words, things along those lines, and try to offset that by either rewriting the problem or have somebody read it to them. This is super, super, duper important for kids who have dyslexia, especially if it's a severe form of dyslexia. And if they have both dyslexia and dyscalculia, then it would be really probably the most helpful, I would think, is to have somebody sit and read it to them, whether it's a peer, which is always good, having groups, if it's the teacher or an aide in the teacher's classroom. Any number of those things would really help out a student with those particular difficulties. Try to prepare problems, in the beginning at least, that does not have extraneous information. Take out the extraneous information or sit with them, help them find it, and then have them cross that out so they know not to use that information. Just something to make things a little bit easier because they're struggling already. I also found something that worked really well was to use things that were familiar to the student to solve their word problems. For example, we would go out to the grocery store once or twice a month, so I would create word problems that had to do with groceries and how much they cost, and then I was able to control the vocabulary and the kind of computation that the child was getting. And monitor the child as they improve, because they will improve if you can do these things for them. And as they improve, make it harder, just like you would for any other student in your classroom. Working in groups in math, too, can be fun for the kids, depending on the assignment. But be sure you always pay attention to the kids that are hooked up with the kids with dyscalculia and dyslexia, because some kids can get kind of mean about it and make fun and call the kid names, and we don't want that. So try to see which kids you're putting in there together as groups. Let's address calculators. Calculators used to be seen as these evil things, and you better memorize your math and everything to do with numbers in your head and all the steps because you wouldn't be able to carry them with you everywhere you went. And then cell phones were invented, and now I even carry one on my wrist in the form of my watch. So calculators are pretty much everywhere that the kids are going. Do they need to know their math facts? Absolutely. Do they need to know the basics of it? Absolutely. But they also need to learn how to use a calculator and use one correctly so that when they're out and they're trying to figure out what the tip should be, they know those steps and how to do it on a calculator, because they're not going to get a piece of paper out on the napkin, whatever, and sit there and write out the problem if they can't retain the numbers in their heads like I can't. I pull my calculator out, I put the numbers in, and I hit the equals key, and there I have what I want to give to the person for a tip. So yes, calculators are shown to be a valid thing that kids have with them now and adults have with them. Research has also shown that calculators don't interfere with the mastery of basic skills. They actually increase achievement. Kids get confident because now they're getting the answers correct. And if it's something that they're repeatedly having to do, then all of a sudden it becomes more memorized, more natural. They're not going to go to the calculator unless they actually need to verify their answer or to just get the answer. They improve students' attitudes towards math. Math is hard, and if they're busy trying to figure out word problems and then have to calculate it, that's hard and that gets really depressing and it takes a long time. Whereas if they have a calculator, they just press the buttons and there they are. There's the answer. They help students solve complex problems. The kids can write out the steps and then do the math on their calculator and get the total and there you go. And they increase the accuracy in the calculation. Calculators, they don't stigmatize anymore either, because we all have them on our cell phone. People just pull them out and use them and don't think too much about it. It used to be that calculators were a stigma for people, but don't think that anymore. The kids got them on their wrists and their watches, on their cell phones. They may, some I doubt, own an actual calculator, but I don't really think that that's something that goes on anymore. I think I just aged myself. Now let's look at some different ways of solving story problems, how we can teach our kids how to solve them. So this is the first recommendation, is make a simple drawing of the problem, write a number sentence, compare the drawing and the number sentence, check that the operation is correct, and then check that the answer makes sense. The next one is called DRAW, D-R-A-W, by Miller and Mercer. Find what you are looking for, what are the parts, set up the numbers, and then to compute, D, discover the sign, R, read the problem, A, answer it, and W, write the answer. The next one is Montague, Applegate, and McCord, and this is read, paraphrase, visualize, hypothesize, estimate, compute, and check. So that's the third method. A fourth one, sequencing for introducing word problems. Word problems with single words or phrases. Sentences with numbers aligned vertically. Traditional paragraph format. Without extraneous information. With extraneous information. With multiple steps. And have students create their own problems. To help them manipulate the language, you can do a close or a maze activity. Example is, John had 36 apples. If he put 6 in a box, how many, and here's your close, could he fill? Have students cross out extraneous information. Have them do that first thing. Provide multi-step problems. Have students tell the order of operations to use. Now, for effective math instruction, Dr. Mather has down for oral presentation to the kids, state the purpose and objective of a math lesson, review prerequisite information, draw relationships between known material and the new material, emphasize important points, use visual supports and manipulatives. Manipulatives are such a big help, I can't even tell you. Ask questions that require students to think about the information, and provide a review of the main points. Effective math instruction, modeling by working through examples, small group teacher-led instruction and peer-mediated practice, a high percentage of engaged time, goal setting and self-charting of progress, and frequent oral responses with feedback. So those are some of the recommendations that Dr. Mather provided to us when we were learning how to teach math. I also want to put in here Excel or the similar kind of worksheet problem, which you can get through Google or Apple. Both have an Excel-like program. And the reason why I recommend it is if the kid can figure out what the formula is, they can plug that into Excel and get out the right answer. And then once it's on a line, they can just keep going the next step, next step, next step, and they don't have to keep rewriting the initial formula. And there's so many different tricks to work with on math with Excel. So as soon as they're capable of learning the basics of it, I highly recommend teaching kids how to use something like Excel or worksheet, math worksheet like that. I realize it is the end of the school year now and most kids are off. I hope the end of the school year went wonderful for you as everybody flees for the mountains or the oceans to get away for a little bit and take a deep breath. And I hope any IEPs that had to be had last minute or shifting of any kind went well and smooth. All right, well, that is it for now. JoJo Sterling and myself are saying good day and good night. And teachers and parents and aunts and uncles and family members of all, enjoy being with your children and have a wonderful summer. And hopefully I'll catch you on here soon.